Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
9:38. You're listening to Total Information AM on KMOX with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. Seven Republican presidential candidates have now met the polling requirements to appear on the August debate stage.
Wow, we're there already. Well, let's learn more about who's included and who's not, what their chances are to actually get close to the White House. With us on the Quiver River Electric guest line, John Shaw is the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Let's start with how candidates do qualify under the rules from the RNC.
Well, it's a pretty Byzantine process. I mean, they have put together this array of criteria, which includes polling, reaching a certain threshold in national polls. The critical one is fundraising, being able to have, I think, 40,000 individual donors with at least 200 donors in 20 different states. So the fundraising is really big, too. Then the candidates also have to sign a couple of different loyalty oaths, as it were. The most significant, I guess, is saying that they would be willing to support the eventual Republican nominee. So these various criteria has played actually a fairly significant role in kind of the early contours of the race, where, you know, candidates who are struggling in the polls are trying to get on this stage on August 23rd in Milwaukee and make their case to GOP voters, but also probably even more critically to donors, to get on the radar of the media, to kind of be discussed in the political class. So there's a big scramble going on to be able to be on that stage in Milwaukee in late August.
Two of the big names right now that I think are still trying to qualify, one of those is Mike Pence. He hasn't met the fundraising threshold. And then the other, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, he hasn't met the polling criteria.
That's right. Those are the two. And then Pence, I guess, is surprising, particularly, you know, the fundraising criteria, as I mentioned, is 40,000 additional or individual donors, you know, in 20 different states. And you would think that, you know, a man who was vice president for 4 years and whose, you know, real job is to just go out in the country and attend, you know, party functions and so forth, would not have a sufficient base that he would be able to get these contributions. And it's interesting how this has become such a game. I mean, Doug Burgum, who is the governor of North Dakota, has literally taken the step of paying people to donate them. I mean, he's developed a system where he's giving them, offering a $20 gift card if they donate at least $1, and that has allowed him to get on past the threshold in terms of having sufficient numbers of fundraising. So lots of scrambling to get on this stage in Milwaukee.
John, let's get down to it. I mean, Donald Trump is the clear leader here in the polls. Who stands out to you as a challenge?
You know, it is. There's not a really obvious choice. I mean, as these people try to get on the stage, I mean, they face, you know, some just basic challenges, which is, you know, Trump is the presumptive front runner. He seems to have a solid base of about 50% of support, which in a crowded field is, you know, very, very formidable. Obviously, as we all know, he faces a slew of serious legal problems that are likely to get worse between now and late August. So for the candidates, I mean, the question is, do they try to find a specific lane? Do they go after Trump? Do they wait for someone else to go after Trump? And I think, you know, in the past, candidates have tried to break through and find ways to kind of break out of the pack. And I think that's true this year. But I also think there's a strategy of just staying alive, staying viable, with the view that, you know, Trump has seemed to be kind of, his status in the party has not waned, even though as these legal problems have multiplied. But if you're a candidate like a DeSantis or Nikki Haley or Chris Christie, Tim Scott, you have to be assuming that at some point the weight of all of this will start bringing Trump down. And so I think for a lot of these candidates, they're just trying to stay alive, trying to stay viable. And I guess the other point I would make that's so striking is no one is talking about issues. I mean, this is, you know, you would think this would be the time where people are staking out, you know, perspectives on various issues. And sure, they have some very, very general, you know, statements they're making. But this is not a campaign in its early months, you know, which is oftentimes referred to as the invisible primary. This is not a period that has been dominated by issues. I mean, it is, you know, the whole focus is Donald Trump and then the scramble to get on the debate stage in a couple weeks.
We're talking with John Shaw. He's director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. When we talk about that debate stage, there's a question of whether Mr. Trump will even show up, because he's said that he has very little to gain and more to lose if he participates.
That's right. I mean, I saw an interview on Fox where he was extremely coy about saying, well, you know, I don't really need a debate and so forth. So I don't know. I mean, the thing that we have to recognize is that, you know, Trump has proved pretty effective in these debates, particularly in 2016. I mean, let's be clear. He was not putting together subtle positions on issues or maybe even coherent positions. But he seems to love the kind of the combat of battling people. You know, the people who took him on, you know, oftentimes came out the lesser. I mean, he has almost this kind of schoolyard sarcasm and, you know, nicknaming people and that sort of thing that, you know, is not going to win, you know, Oxford debate points, but is effective in you know, in audience, Republican audiences, live crowds, and so forth. So I saw where Chris Christie said over the weekend, he says Trump is going to show up. He does not walk away from a stage that gives him attention. So he hasn't said for sure, and strategically it might make sense for him to wait it out. But my hunch is that the chance to go on stage and to just have the attention focused on him is something that he will not be able to resist.
One last question for you, John. If Mr. Trump does not implode with all the legal issues and he is still the front runner, could any of these individuals who will be in this debate have to walk a fine line because they might want to be his vice presidential pick?
Sure. I think there's probably a handful of these people who, you know, who would not be, you know, who'd be willing to be his vice presidential pick. Although it's interesting when we think back of just the current president and vice president, Kamala Harris, you know, in the first couple debates went after Joe Biden, then Vice President Biden, very, very hard, to the point people are saying, man, why is she even doing this? It's going to compromise, you know, any chance she would have to be the VP nominee. And he ended up choosing her. So I think people will be careful, and they're all trying to do the same thing, which is, you know, wait for someone else to take this swing at punch, hopefully knock them down so they can step forward. There's not a lot of people battling to take Trump on directly, although Chris Christie has eagerly embraced that mantle. So, yeah, everyone is being careful, and no one is quite certain what these next couple months are going to have in store, because it just feels like this is a you know, potentially tumultuous couple months looming in GOP politics.
The director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU is John Shaw. Thank you so much for being with us again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.